Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
What we do in Doubters Club is a lot of times we'll say, hey, because again, you know, it's modeling friendship and pursuing truth together. So we would say, like, would you mind if I ask you a question about this? And so I will do that to you, Guy. Would you mind if I ask you questions about your story?
Sure.
Is that okay?
You can ask questions.
Okay. If you said no, it would make for a really short podcast.
I was going to say, sure. If she says no at this point, I'm not sure what happens next.
Oh, I don't know.
I have a few questions on my own.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello there, and welcome back to the show. An interesting one for you today, something called the Doubters Club. I'll introduce you to my guests in just a moment. Glad to say that we're very soon going to be launching a few things. A new mini site from Premier Unbelievable, where you'll be able to access not just this show, Unbelievable, but all our podcasts, videos, and resources from one place. We'll be making that live very soon, so look out for news of that. And that's all ahead of an even bigger website that will go live in May when we hold our Unbelievable conference. Put the date in your diary, though. Saturday, the 14th of May, we're going to be bringing it to you live from the British Library in London. Really exciting. And in just a couple of weeks' time, we'll be releasing the booking for that. But it'll be possible to attend from anywhere in the world online. We're really looking forward to people joining us both in person and online for this year's conference, and some really exciting speakers and a theme for you this year. Lots of exciting things in the pipeline at the moment as well. More webinars, our 2022 season of The Big Conversation that we're currently working on. Peter Byram and I are working our socks off to bring you it all in 2022. But for now, the usual place to get more from the show is our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, and the ways to get hold of the newsletter and support the show are with the podcast today, if that's the way you're listening. We've had loads of feedback to last week's barnstormer between Peter Linus and Jane Ozan on gay conversion therapy. I'll bring you some of that at the end of today's show. For now, here's this week's conversation. Today on the show, we're asking, can a doubter find a place in church? My guests are Preston Ulmer and Gaia McDermott. The Doubters Club is a new book by Preston Ulmer that tells the story of the initiative he began to create good faith conversations with skeptics, atheists, and the spiritually wounded. Today, Preston will be in conversation with a doubter and a skeptic, someone who maybe has even been spiritually wounded along the way, Gaia McDermott. Gaia rejected the Christian faith she grew up in, but has been exploring church again as an adult, and she tells her listeners all about it on the podcast she hosts, Face the Sun. So far, Gaia remains a skeptic, but she's here to talk to Preston about her journey and to ask, can a doubter like me find a place in the church? So, Gaia and Preston, welcome along to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, it's great to meet you both. Gaia, we go back a long way. I think you've been listening to Unbelievable for a few years now. Preston, your first time on the show. Glad to have you here. We'll start with you, Preston. Tell us your story first and how the Doubters Club began.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Justin. And I'm looking forward to this conversation. My story, you know, it involves a lot of skepticism, a lot of doubt, but I did grow up in a home that we would go to church, and it would be an evangelical Christian household. And then I say I became an atheist in Bible college, which is, you know, I thought was rare and uncommon, but the more I travel and speak to people in Bible college and that graduate Bible college, it's not all that rare. And I started experiencing a lot of questions really about my sophomore year. And I would say, you know, some of those questions were just basic questions, how you're going to interpret scripture, things that you would think would come up. But it snowballed. And I had some well-meaning, but they just get well-meaning Pentecostal pastors that gave me really bad advice. Okay, so I put this in the book, but they told me sleep on the Bible, like osmosis, you know, just put your head on the Word of God, get this in your head, and that didn't work. It just, I don't know if it's the translation I used or what, but it doesn't work. And then they told me listen to more worship music. And all these things that people were just kind of scared of the questions. And what I realized was that it wasn't just my questions. It was where I was starting to land with my answers. So I think that looking back, I see my story as people say the church is a safe place to wrestle with faith, but it's not always a safe place to land at a different answer. And if that's not the case, then it's actually not a safe place to wrestle with faith. And so I left the faith. I didn't want anything to do with really Christianity or Christians at that point. And it was someone who came to me and said, I don't care where you land as long as you're honest. A professor of philosophy and apologetics, and he genuinely wasn't, I'd say this, but he wasn't concerned whether I quote-unquote converted or not. He just wanted me to be honest along the journey. So... long story short, it took a while, but I just started to become convinced that Jesus did rise from the grave. That was kind of, everything else just didn't matter to me. That was foundational, and I didn't even know that that was foundational until I started asking those sorts of questions. What it came down to for me was, if God exists, what type of God would that be? And how has he revealed himself, if he ever has? And those sort of questions. So then, whenever you fast forward, I get married, and I continue education. I say it's for my own sanity. It wasn't for degrees on a wall. I just needed to stay sane, and so I kept pursuing education. And then we decided we wanted to go to Denver, Colorado, to start a faith community. And I walk into a coffee shop, and I ask a coffee shop owner, really a stupid question in the urban center of Denver, right? And I said, hey, what kind of church do you go to? And and to assume anyone goes to church in Denver is silly. But I asked him that, and he just laughed. He said, I'm an atheist. I don't go to church. And I said, I used to be an atheist. I used to not believe in all this either. And I said, but if you did go to church, what kind of church would you go to? And he's like, no, I don't go to church. And I remember telling him, I will buy more coffee from you if you'll just answer the question. and he said, you know, I would go to a church. All right, he actually said this. I would go to a place, not a church, that would allow me to ask questions and doesn't judge me for thinking differently. So I'm leaving that. He's the coffee shop owner. I'm leaving there, and he said, what's your name? I said, Preston. And he said, are you going to start a church in this neighborhood? And I said, I don't know. And that's when he said, if it's that kind of place, I think that you should. So we went back there months later, and I said, hey, I have an idea. What if you, an atheist, and me, a Christian, what if we were to start conversations and just show our friendship and just we get to know each other more, and I'm not interested in having you think like me, but I just want to know what's true. And if I'm wrong, I remember telling him, if I'm wrong, I moved my whole family to Denver, Colorado for this. I would want to know that I'm wrong. And he said, hey, if I'm wrong, I'd want to know it too. So that's kind of the origin story of the Doubters Club. I will fully admit I have a bias towards that sort of journey of holding ground for people and assuming that they have integrity along the way. So I don't call it an evangelism technique or anything like that. I mean, it is a club. And now we have, you know, a ton of Doubters Clubs that have started around the world. But it is to this day my favorite place, where you have a Christian and a non-Christian who are co-moderating conversation, and they're modeling friendship with one another.
Well, I think what attracted me when I received the book was that it sounded a lot like what we've been trying to do on Unbelievable for a number of years. And how long has the Dadders Club been functioning as an organization in that sense, Preston?
About 5 years.
Great.
Dadders Club's been going on about 5 years now.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to getting into this conversation because, in a way, we're kind of doing on a public footing what you do personally with people all the time, I'm sure, in terms of having these kinds of conversations. But let's meet Gaia. Gaia, welcome to the show. So tell us a bit of your own journey up to this point, Gaia, because you're now hosting this podcast where you've been trying out places of worship, seeing what you think of it. But what took you to that place? Because I know you've had a rocky sort of relationship with Christianity up to this point.
Yeah, my background is that I was raised in Christianity. I went to Catholic schools and churches when I was a child up to 19. And then I started to go to Protestant churches in my 20s. And when I was in the Catholic Church, one of the things that was I got caught up on was the rules. They got really confusing, and there's not long enough time in this podcast to go over all the rules that got so confusing. But one of them that caught my attention was I remember being taught that if you missed Mass, that you would have to confess the sin of missing Mass. And if you didn't confess that sin, you couldn't receive communion until you had. So I began to think about how those, as I got older, realizing that those who were divorced couldn't receive communion, and those who were pro-choice or who supported death with dignity for those who had terminal illnesses couldn't receive communion. You know, I got to wonder who the heck was going to get to receive communion at some stage. And I was also really appalled that this was a mechanism to control people. There's also so many other rules that controlled, so I just felt like I just can't do this anymore. And I went to Protestant churches, and I found that there was other unique, you know, rules and hoops to jump through. And I found them both to be on the same playing field on things socially that I was not agreeing to. So in it, I started to think, what if all of this isn't true? And here I am just going on with my life following this way, and none of it's true. Just like all the other religions that you would look at and think, well, that's absurd, that's odd, who would ever believe that? And then thinking, gosh, who would ever believe what I'm believing? So one of the things that I did, one of my earliest books that I read back in my later 20s, was Bible Prophecy, Failure or Fulfillment by Tim Callahan. And that book criticized Josh McDowell's book, Evidence Demands a Verdict. And I had memorized that book. I had memorized Evidence Demands a Verdict, highlighted it. I was like ready to give a defense, right? Because that's what I was taught in the Protestant churches, was to be ready to give a defense. And in reading this book, Bible Prophecy, Failure or Fulfillment, it got me to start questioning everything that I had been building myself up to. And I started reading, you know, who wrote the Gospels and different other books that would give me more understanding. And I guess over that time, I just realized that this wasn't true, and I had walked away from it. It's not an easy thing to do. It takes a little while to get to, you know, to move away, but I was able to move away and kind of change my perspective on things. So essentially what I'd said to Preston when we had talked, and I think, Justin, you're of the same ilk, is that it's I believe that things are all going to work out, you know, in the end, because something that you say, Preston, too, in your book, is you talk about love and you talk about truth. And I think that if that's what we're gunning for, if we're going for truth and we're going for love, it's just going to work out. And if there's a good God, then there's a good God, and that'll work itself out. And if there isn't a God, then I'll know when I die, I'll know as much as I knew before I was born, which is nothing. Mm. So, yeah.
I'm just interested, Gaia, do you ever give yourself a label? Do you call yourself an atheist, an agnostic, an ex-evangelical? Is there anything you would go by?
Yeah, I didn't hear the term evangelical until I got myself on TikTok, and I was like, wow, look at this.
They're everywhere on TikTok.
And there's no support back, you know, then 20 plus years ago when I left. There's none of this, you know, no internet, no nothing. But I think I called myself spiritual when I first started to leave, and I was really interested in female spirituality. And then I got to realize that because spirituality for me in Catholicism and in Protestantism was that God the Father, male, God the Son, male, the Holy Spirit is assumed male, mm-hmm. and all the male mm-hmm. stuff in the Bible, all the atrocities of the men to women, and that I felt that people just shrugged those things off. So, yeah, I would have called myself spiritual, and then I would have called myself agnostic, and then now I would call myself atheist.
Hmm. Okay. So what's led you to want to sort of dip your toe back in by visiting these places of worship that you've gone on this interesting journey and tell your listeners about on your podcast? What's led you to even want to bother, I suppose, continuing to engage with the Christian world to the extent that you have?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever left that. I think I'm very, very curious, and I want to know more about psychology and sociology and people and others. So I've never kind of left it. When my son was little, I would drive past churches and think, oh, let's go in there. And he'd be like, oh, he would hate it. But so I would, I really wanted community that is very big. And I mentioned that a great deal on my podcast. I don't know if I'm looking for a church or looking to become a Christian, go back to that. But I am looking to see how we can meld communities with different viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And then what?
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, so sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. What I was just going to say, Justin, is that I think that you were at some level a catalyst for my podcast. So, yeah, because you're having Christian and atheist on and me listening to you, it was just exciting to see that kind of respect that you show to each other. And that got me to kind of think about how I'd like to pull that in and have conversations with others as well.
Great. Yeah, well, I've really enjoyed the episodes that I've been able to listen to of the Face the Sun podcast that you run,
thanks,
Gaia. So thank you for it. And Preston, I mean, this is, you know, I suppose Gaia maybe represents a lot of other people, but everyone's unique.
Yeah.
You've come to have conversations with. But is Gaia's story, do you feel that, do you meet that among the people you interact with at the Doubters Club?
Well, Gaia and I got to talk yesterday on the phone. And what's neat about it is there's a point where we said, you know what, let's save those questions for tomorrow for the discussion.
I'm glad you didn't have the whole conversation before the show.
Oh, no, not at all. No, it was a great conversation, though. And you know what I've realized, Justin, is that, Gaia, your story is unique because it's your story. And it doesn't – even the stats behind – you know, how many people that leave Christianity based on leadership abuse, spiritual abuse, spiritual hurt, spiritual woundedness, all those statistics sometimes are helpful, but not all the time, because it's wrapped up in story. We're talking about personal, not just dilemmas, but disruptions and disorientations. And so the fact that you still have a curiosity about you, Gaia, is fascinating and very helpful. So a lot of times in Doubters Club settings, you're right, Justin, we do have people that would say, I grew up in Catholic church, or I grew up in Protestant home or evangelical, and I've since left. I would say, if I had to put a stat to it, it's well over 90% of people who would say that that's their upbringing. You know, a lot of times the reason people don't go to church is because they've gone to a church before. Okay. And so that's common. What's so unique, though, is like the pieces, Gaia, where you said the rules. When you talked about mass, when you talked about when you went to a Protestant church, there's more rules and regulations, but yet you do have this hunger for love and for truth, and that, what I heard you say, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, is if there is a God, it would be the personification of both of those things. Am I right in saying that? Am I right in saying that if there is one, that you're making an assumption that would be the type of God that would exist?
If there's a good God, then everything should work out. You know, if there's a good God, even if that means God looks at me and says, sorry, it's hell. You know, that it's like, well, that's a bummer. But if there's a good God, then you'd have to say that that God was making a good decision, even if I wouldn't agree with it or like it. But yeah, I believe that if there's a good God, things will be fine. And I don't believe there is one. And therefore, I will know as much as I knew when before I was born.
So what we do in Doubters Club is a lot of times we'll say, hey, because again, you know, it's modeling friendship and pursuing truth together. So we would say, like, would you mind if I ask you a question about this? And so I will do that to you, Guy. Would you mind if I ask you questions about your story?
Sure.
Is that okay?
You can ask questions.
Okay. If you said no, it would make for a really short podcast.
I was going to say, if she says no at this point, I'm not sure what happens next.
Oh, I don't know.
I have a few questions of my own.
I was going to say, before you ask those questions, Preston, it might be helpful just to clue people a bit in what you're talking about there. Obviously, you run the Doubters Club with some specific caveats and ways of doing things. Do you want to just give us the essential principles of what makes for you for these good faith conversations? And then obviously we'll try to model them as we go along.
Yeah, so we do say Doubters Club is, look, we get people ask all the time, what's the actual agenda? And I'm like, Christians have done a really poor job at just having gatherings with people without agendas, okay? Mm-hmm. But we don't have ulterior motives. Our aim is model friendship with people who don't think like you and pursue truth with one another. That's the aim. That's what we're going for in every Doubters Club. Doubters Clubs, they can never take place in the church. They have to be co-moderated between a Christian and a non-Christian, two people that would think differently than one another. And in doing so, they're going to model that friendship and they're going to pursue truth together. There actually has to be a friendship there. There has to be a relationship there. So when people call or email and say, hey, I would like to start a Doubters Club, one of the first questions, we have a 5-question survey. One of the first questions is, tell us about a person in your life that you have a good standing relationship with that doesn't think like you. And when they say, I don't have a person like that, then it's like, hey, we would be happy to help you live that sort of lifestyle, but let's push starting a Doubters Club way back, the timeline of it. And we go through rules. We do have rules. Gaia, they're not rules like the church, okay? But they're very different rules. We value respect above being right. We listen without interrupting. We call it a safe place. We understand and accept differences of opinion. We just go through these rules. They're very important. And a lot of times, Justin, we will point, they're on a chalkboard. We'll point to the chalkboard and say, hey, don't forget rule number 3. Don't forget rule number 2. I did have a guy walk in one time who said, if I had known these rules, I wouldn't be on my 4th marriage.
To that extent, it's called the Doubters Club rather than the Debaters Club. I'm assuming this isn't a place just to have a big argument. It's actually about trying to develop genuine, authentic relationships and so on.
That's right. Absolutely. And so that's kind of a rundown of what a Doubters Club is. We don't open with prayer. We don't close in prayer, and we don't bring a sacred text. It's not a Christian gathering. I've had people from the Christian community that have said, hey, is it concerning to you, and this would be from a certain type of brand of Christianity, is it concerning to you that you have people in leadership in the Doubters Club that are living together and they're not married? And I'd say, we have atheists in leadership in the Doubters Club. It's a club. It's actually not. Now, of course, I'm a Christian. I love the church, but I do make the separation pretty clear in my mind. Doubters Club is not the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all really helpful background knowledge to help people get a sense of how these conversations are done, you know, the nature of it. So please do go ahead, ask those questions that you were going to ask Gaia about earlier, and then we'll come to your questions as well shortly, Gaia.
Oh, sure. And I'm fascinated in, it seems like, you know, the buzzword right now on TikTok, Gaia. I'm not on TikTok, and I have young girls, and I'm like, please don't ever get on TikTok, but you are stewarding TikTok well. The buzzword there on Instagram is deconstruction, right? A lot of people saying they're deconstructionists. It seems like you went through a phase of deconstruction, but you still use those tools. You know, you have a curiosity about you that honestly I wish Christians would still have about God. I know your curiosity would maybe land in more of like a psychological, social arena, but there's something about that. You didn't just deconstruct and then say, this is who I am. It sounds like you're still deconstructing. Tell me about what's caused you to stay curious.
That's just my brand of who I am and how I've been. I remember being in Catholic Church when they would tell you what communion was, that it was the body and blood of Christ, and I was like, so we're eating flesh, and they're like, no. So it's just the way I am, to stay curious. And, you know, this deconstruction word, I never heard that either. It was such a lonely, lonely process 20, 25 years ago. And to see people having a community on deconstruction and seeing Christians get upset about the deconstructing, it's like, why would you be upset about people trying to find the truth? You know, but yeah, so I'm just a curious person by nature, I would say.
And is there anything that you're saying, like, I'm more certain than I am curious on that topic whenever it comes to spirituality in general?
I'm certain there's no God. I know that.
Okay. So that's a place. And what drove that certainty home to you during your journey?
I've done a lot of studies. It became so to study the birth of Jesus and realizing some hiccups there in regards to the census and other things. It just goes on to a lot of different apologetic type conversation. And then also studying the resurrection. That's the one I'm hot on. I like Bart Ehrman is fantastic. I know you've had him on, Justin, for a debate here, and I've done an episode on the resurrection, and we did a debate discussion. We don't have debates on my podcast either, but the resurrection was really seeing all the concerns there stopped me in my tracks, and I it's a nice way to bring it to any Christian because that's and you can pull that apart, the gig is up, right? The buck stops here. If Jesus didn't rise, we're done. So it's a great way to focus because there's so many issues there rather than taking, you know, evolution and this and that and the other. It's like, well, did the resurrection happen or not? Let's talk about it. And then we can wrap things up if I can pull things apart in that regard. So the studies of things that helped me understand was hard to refute. To be honest, Preston, it was really hard to refute some of those things. And then when I think of it, when people say that they're doubters, I think, well, you should doubt. Your God is invisible. Mm-hmm. Your God is invisible, and you can't see him. You can't touch him. You can't hear him. And people say, well, I heard God. And it's always that, you know, the fluffy version. It's not the, you know, somebody really speaking into their ears. So it was just all of the above kind of thing.
That's really helpful in understanding your story too, that, you know, it's not just out of this, you know, this disorientation from the church, but you're like, and then I put in the study. And the fascinating thing, Gaia, is the thing that you said, I'm not satisfied with the answers. I go, that might be the only thing I'm satisfied with is the answer about the resurrection. And that's why, Justin, for me, when we talk Doubters Club, I'm like, if Gaia lived closer, we'd be good friends, because there's a certain point where I'm not going to convince her of things that she's already studied, but the community and the relationship and how can we help our city? How can we help each other? And is there truth to be found that I haven't found or that Gaia hasn't found? I would rather do that together than to go find it, bring it back to her. And I think historically, probably in the last 50 years, we've been worse about it, but Christians have gone and got the truth and brought it back and said, hey, here's the feast. And then, you know, atheists or agnostics, they go, that I'm allergic to that. that's not actually what I'm after. So thanks for telling me that, Gaia. I'll have more questions, but I want to open up to you if there's a question you have.
Well, before we pass it to Gaia, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back. We're having a conversation on doubt today. Can a doubter find a place in church? Gaia McDermott has started a podcast in which she explores churches, places of worship, as a skeptic, as an atheist. But she's interested. She's curious, she says. And she's in conversation today with Preston Ulmer, who's the author of The Doubters Club. He's founded Doubters Clubs all over the USA, and we'll be continuing their conversation very shortly.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to today's edition of the show. We're talking about doubt. The Doubters Club is a new book by Preston Ulmer. It tells the story of a new initiative he began to bring good faith conversations between skeptics, atheists, and the spiritually wounded. It's almost like doing on the ground what we've been trying to do with Unbelievable over the years. But Gaia is our other guest today. Gaia McDermott, who's the host of the Face the Sun podcast, Belief and Unbelief, Religion and Unbelief is the strapline of the podcast. There are links, by the way, to both of my guests from today's show. So Gaia, we were hearing your story of why you've rejected faith. You call yourself an atheist now. You came to have doubts and then rejected really entirely the foundation of the Christian faith. And your belief in God went as well at the same time. You say at the end of the day, God is invisible. I mean, obviously, there are philosophical arguments out there. We've heard some of them probably, the existence of God and so on. But even someone like Bart Ehrman, I don't think, calls himself an atheist. I think he's more of an agnostic at this point as far as his beliefs about God go. He doesn't believe in the resurrection, obviously. But So do you feel like that's a closed door to you? Is there anything that could or would make you reconsider? Is there any, you know, if it could be cracked open again, a fraction, what might it look like, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say that there's never a closed door for me, in that, you know, when I was a Christian, it wasn't closed, apparently, for me to become an atheist. But as an atheist, I don't think that when I say that there's that's the only truth. So I'm trying to understand what truth is, and you believe what you can believe, and what you believe is true. Otherwise, you'd be believing something else, and you just kind of try your best. So it's definitely not a closed door for me.
Okay. And when you do go into church, what you say you're looking for community, is that it, or do you enjoy any of the things that normally happen in church, like praying and singing and that kind of thing?
Not so much. So when I go to church, I have a vision of what I think some things could change in churches. So no, worship is awful. The singing is really rough for me, and there's a lot of things that are difficult. If you listen to some of the episodes, there was a few that I enjoyed, and I took something away. And once I started to go to, actually, the last three churches I went to were what I would call rainbow churches, and those were very pleasant. I did go to some other ones that were conservative, that were surprisingly nice to go to as well. So my future, what I'd like to see, I think when I look back at Andy Stanley, he wrote a book, Deep and Wide, and he really does talk to people who, you know, wants to bring in people who don't believe necessarily. And what he said was, when drums were brought in, that was unusual, electric guitars. Now it's light shows and smoke machines. And I do think that churches have a deep opportunity to change. And I would say that if they kept the singing part fast and the talking part fast, this message part fast, and I think that there's opportunity, because I really want community. I don't want Christianity, but I want community, and there's plenty of places to get it. But what I think that there should be more interactive with learning how to listen, learning how to question. I do a lot of work with street epistemology, and I try to learn how to do questioning. And what I'll do is I'll watch it on YouTube, and I'll pause it and think, I wonder what the question will be next, and I'll prepare myself. I think there's workshops that churches could do to create better questioning, because there's a gentleman named, I forget his first name, his last name is Hayward, and he's also called the Naked Pastor, which I love his name. And
Instagram account.
Yeah. I just learned of him not too long ago, and he wrote a book called Questions Are the Answers. And that's what I believe, is that we're not asking enough questions and we're not listening. I mean, Christians will ask questions like, why? And you put you back you against a wall. But they're not very good at street epistemology because they always want to tell you. They want to tell you, you know, they don't want to listen.
Sure. And I get the sense in that sense that what you don't like about church is the bits where it's basically a top down, the person preaching, the music kind of being sung at you. You like the bit where everybody has a say, where everyone gets together and so on. So it sounds like, you know, you'd love the Doubters Club in that sense. Preston, what are your thoughts on some of these reactions that Guy has to the churches when she goes into them? And feel free to comment also on her sense that she's open, but she's not sure what that would look like if she were to come back to anything resembling some kind of faith.
Well, first I'll say there are still churches, Gaia, that I go to that I'm like, the singing's terrible and the preaching's terrible. And Justin has experienced those too. I actually just did an interview with the Naked Pastor, the guy that you were just talking about. And in talking to him, this is probably about a month and a half ago, in talking to him, I asked him, you know, about his journey and such. And, you know, he would be different in that he is open to believing that Jesus would be the ultimate image of God. Now, how he would interpret Jesus would be different than mainstream evangelical thought for sure. But he gives this analogy, Gaia, that he says his journey has been like de-weeding a garden, that it is continual. He is trying to reveal something that I'll go back to that you said, like love and truth. He's trying to preserve a garden. And in that way, he does not stop doubting and he doesn't stop deconstructing. So I would be curious in your life, to go back to this person that you and I both know, in your life, is there anything that you're like, that is the most precious thing to me, that for Christians, it would be belief in God, it would be the resurrection, and they're, you know, constantly defending that. For you, is there anything that you're like, that, is it community? Is it authentic community? Is it a certain type of community? I would just be curious what it is for you that you're like, I'm constantly wanting to protect that.
Probably all the things that, like, one of the things I would call myself is a humanist, and I think all the things that humans would value, you know, that we value each other, that we value life, love, laughter, good food, wine. I don't know. There's a lot of things to value, but certainly friendship and depth of relationship, I think, is important to me.
And on your view of people who are religious or Christians, do you feel like they tend to have that same value, or had in your experience, do they not have that same value?
Well, after the past 5-6 years of what I would call this Trumpism, which I think has damaged your side of the aisle, Preston. That I'm not sure always how, and I'm trying to use different words when I say Christians. I used to say it was almost like a swear word to me, but it's instead to think about people as maybe evangelical or Christian. And so the evangelical side or fundamentalist side, that has become more and more what I think is pretty hateful and angry and bitter. I think that there's a reason why in the 1990s that we were looking at only 5% being nuns, and now we're looking at 35% in our country being nuns. I think after Trump and the pandemic, you all are going to get a really great opportunity to find out how that hate and bitterness worked out, you know, for you all. So I don't know if I would necessarily equate Christianity with the things that I value.
It's interesting because the things you said you value, even good wine, I feel like Jesus values. And I do, in all seriousness, I do wonder, and this would be in the form of a question, Gaia, I do wonder if Christians were to go back to their roots in that way, if the church or if you found a community, let's just say a local community that you're like, they went back to their root, they are, this is the Jesus way. High love for neighbor, that they are, it outweighs any sort of self-indulgence that you'd find in capitalism or anything like that, that would probably be some critiques from other people in the church. If you found a community like that, would that be a piece of evidence for you that maybe there is something here? Or would it be like, what would that experience be like for you?
So I think my question back to you, Preston, would be, how would that come to being? How would the church get back to its roots?
Yeah. Wow, that is a question. You know, I wish that there's so many people that I feel like are trying to get back to the roots, and I think a way, you know, I also just talked with Dr. David Gushy, who wrote After Evangelicalism. I think that's the title of his new book, and he talks about this, Gaia, where he says a way to go back, like after evangelicalism. So he would be, you know, someone that would say he's a Christian, but he's not going to be evangelical Christian. And he would probably be someone that would say that the way forward is starting new faith communities. The way forward would be from a grassroots approach. The way forward would be personal responsibility. It's going to be, it's not Sunday centric. It's the things that you said you don't like about the Sunday experience. When I were talking about a Christian church of worship and the singing and the preaching, it's going to be not centered around those things. It's going to be centered around how you treat your neighbor. It's going to be centered around how you have a self-awareness of your own story and what you've done with that story. It's going to be how you use your money. There's going to be so much personal responsibility on that, that I think that would be a change. I think that's a way forward. That's what interested us in starting a church in the first place, was asking the same question that you just asked of what would it look like to go back to our roots, the Jesus way? Because I think you and I are both intrigued by that way, whether you say Jesus existed or he rose from the grave, and you set that aside. But the ways of Jesus are intriguing. I think it's going to take that. It's a personal responsibility, not a personal salvation, in saying that how do we get everyone to believe the way we believe, but how is this working out in my life, in the way I spend my money, in the way I love people, in who how I stop judging people. All those things I think are going to be really important. And so that's what I'm curious around. If you experienced that, does that change anything for you? Or is that just a sigh of relief, like I finally have that community?
Well, I thought something that you said there, Preston, was interesting. So when you talk about, I think that several things. So one of them is I'd love to see Christians being possibly just staying into the Matthew, Mark, Luke, John circle. I said that on my last podcast that I don't know what the rush is to read the Bible in a year. Just maybe stay in the Jesus part, because I think that they lose it. I think they start going off on some other rules and things. And
we just feel better about ourselves when we read it in a year. I don't know why. Yeah. It's peculiar.
So I also noticed that you said the word judging. So how do we start judging? And one of the things that I think would be helpful, it goes back to David Hayward on the questions or the answers. I think one of the things that helps us humans, so Christians and everybody else, is that if we're not judging and we ask questions. And one of the things I thought of was the story that you told about Travis, the gentleman who there were people who had judgment of him that he was with, living with his fiance. And I think that there's an opportunity there to ask questions. So when they were judging, I think an opportunity when they were saying, well, what will other people think and what message does that send, that this person is in leadership. And I think it's an opportunity to turn and ask questions of, well, what do you think the message is? And what do you think? Do you think that there's anybody else in the church, or the pastor, that do you think people judge him? How should we handle that? But I think that if we make people do the work, that we're going to have either an exceptionally great conversation, or at least a good one, or we're going to rope-a-dope them by questions and we'll tire them out and we don't have to get into these arguments, that we can kind of do like a master swaying from the judgment bullets that are coming. If you ask questions, you can just wear them out, or you can at least get this a great conversation.
Well, I'm just interested in stepping in here just a little bit to ask, Preston, there's this interesting sort of thing going on here where most churches that I know would say that they want to be open to people. They want to be open to them with their questions even. Now, I'm sure there are some churches better at doing that than others. But there's also that point at which mm-hmm. a church also very often will say, but we do hold some things to be true, or there are some kinds of specifics about how we believe the Christian life is to be lived. Mm-hmm. And that may involve saying, for instance, well, we do believe that there's a particular view of marriage that we hold to be central, mm-hmm. and that if you call yourself a follower of Christ, if you want to be, let's say, a member of this church, then you will need to abide by that. Mm-hmm. That may involve, you know, some kind of issue around whether people live together before they're married, or may involve issues around homosexuality and everything else, mm-hmm. which for Gaia has obviously, she's felt those rules have kind of been exclusive, and those are the things that she felt really turned her off church. Whereas I can see many church leaders say, well, we want to be open, but we also feel that in good conscience to be a follower of Christ in this place, mm-hmm. ultimately, this is the path in which, you know, you must ultimately walk. So how do you kind of balance that? Because I mm-hmm. suppose at some point, even if we make space for doubters and their questions, many churches will nevertheless, there'll still be a point at which they'll say, but really,
sure,
then you need to be here at this point before you can join this club. It's not the Doubters Club, it's the Christian sure. Club. It's where we do have a rule for life about what is involved in saying that you are committing your life to following Jesus in this particular place. So how do you navigate all of that fact, I suppose?
Yeah. Well, it's very messy and complicated, and it's not unique to just Christian church. I mean, any time that you're going to be, even the club, the Doubters Club, we say it's the least exclusive club in the world. But we still have rules, right? We still have rules. To date, we've only had to ask two people to leave in 5 years in all the locations. So, but we did have to ask them to leave. So I just want to first say, it's not exclusive. I mean, even if you do a book club, if you don't read the book and you keep coming to the book club and you're just eating all the free food, like, you might be asked to leave, right?
We all know that one person.
I know. And if someone's watching this and they're like, I don't know that, they're that person, okay? but it's not that idea of the closer you get to the more in you become, the more you have to change your actions and your beliefs. That's not actually unique to the church. It's not. I think what's unique to the church would be whenever we make claims like you're free to ask questions here. But then when people land at a different place, the way that they're ostracized or the way that they're not received or the way that they're trying to be controlled, you know, don't post this on your social media. Well, why can't you post that? Well, because other people know that you go here, and if you put, and that's unique in some of the experiences probably that even Gaia has heard stories of or maybe had herself. And so I think that that's unique. The control aspect of it is unique. Within the church too, Justin, you know, the Sunday service, when we become so Sunday-centric, now we have rules who can serve, who can run sound, who can't run sound, who can play the drums. And I see Gaia nodding her head. You know what I'm talking
yeah.
about. When we read the Gospels, and I'll include it into just the New Testament, okay? When we read the New Testament and the formation of a movement, there is this distinct aspect of it that they do worship together, but they're known by what they're doing in the community and in what they believe. But again, that's in what you believe and what you do. That's not unique in any club. I mean, that's part of it, right? To be in. But I think when we start drawing lines around who can worship on Sunday mornings, that becomes peculiar. And I'll give an example. I'll give an example that probably is going to resonate with a lot of your viewers. In my opinion, as I read the New Testament, I have landed at a place that I'm a pacifist, okay? That I would say I don't believe it's okay to kill your enemies. If I were to just simplify it, because I follow Jesus, when he says love your enemies, that doesn't mean kill them. And in fact, I think the early church had some impulses that were correct in saying you got to lay down the Roman sword before you get baptized. I mean, there's just this tradition that we have of loving and caring for our enemies and not cutting their ears off, okay? So I think that's how I feel like it's actually crystal clear. I have Christian brothers and sisters who strongly disagree with me. be it just war theory or whatever, right? Or that they just live in Missouri and they like their guns. They just disagree with me. And they do so on the basis of their interpretation of Scripture. Now, I think killing is a really big deal. But I will stand next to someone on a Sunday service and worship with them with two very different perspectives. That I'm going, I can't kill them. I don't even have a gun. And then you have someone else who, you know, they're ready for someone to step foot on their lawn. And both claim to love Jesus. And in that situation, both are welcomed in. And they're allowed to worship. But on a topic like sexuality, where there's a disagreement, again, the closer you get, there are beliefs and practices that become normative. That's normal. But we're talking Sunday worship services. It's peculiar to me when churches draw a line and say they can't worship because they think differently on sexuality than you do. And I'm like, wait a second, they think differently on killing people than I do. And they're welcomed in. And so I think that the peculiarity of probably Gaia's experiences and other people's experiences, to answer your question, is actually around that worship service. But we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that the closer you get in, the more your beliefs and behaviors have to change. That's normal to any sort of organization.
Mm. What's your thoughts on that, Gaia?
I have a lot of thoughts on the marriage and with LGBTQ in the church and with abortion in the church, which I certainly mm-hmm. did a series on abortion because you can't even find really a verse in the Bible that is against abortion, and you can find some things that are kind of highlighting almost how to have one. But boy, do they really drill down hard on that and control it and want to control women, and it's a very complicated subject, you know. So it's the control stuff on that, the control stuff on the marriage. It definitely got me to there was the other half, which you talk about heart and head, Preston, in your book, and the heart stuff, the head stuff that we talked about with the Bart Ehrman resurrection and questions about the birth of Jesus and other things. So, but then on the heart stuff of the LGBTQ, women, race, after George Floyd was murdered, I listened to sermons around Connecticut, places I'd been, and they didn't even hardly touch on it, except for one church. And that gentleman is a conservative, and he has my ultimate loyalty, because he made sure he did a series on it in Weathersfield, and people just left. Some people had concerns about that, him talking about race, right? So the control on the issues of race and women and LGBTQ are concerning. The control on volunteering, I'll say this, is that before I was doing the whole series of visiting places of worship, I visited one where they wouldn't let me volunteer to pour coffee. I mean, I was an atheist, so that wrapped that up. It's just really an uncomfortable place when it comes down to that.
Hmm. Do you feel like, I mean, presumably, has the church ever stopped you going into their church because you're an atheist guy? Or presumably, I'm guessing no. I mean, that would seem to be counterproductive at some level for any church people coming
yeah.
in. But obviously, there have been barriers when you've tried to move further than just simply attending the worship service. So you've wanted to volunteer, say, and they know that you don't have any beliefs, you're an atheist, maybe you disagree with them on issues around LGBT, whatever. And for me, Preston, I can imagine for a number of churches, most churches I know of would be perfectly happy for anyone like Gaia to come in mm-hmm. and worship and just attend, essentially. But it is that point at which you move into having responsibilities, there was a big hoo-ha a few years ago when Hillsong in New York, I think, there someone who wanted to sing in the choir turned out to be in a gay relationship and was asked not to be involved and so on. And I think a lot of people say, hang on, what's the harm? What's the difference between doing that or simply being attending the church? But obviously for some churches there is a line, and different churches are going to draw it in different places as to what kind of level of commitment or expectation or mm-hmm. belief even that they're expecting once you've kind of start to engage in a certain way in the church. And obviously for Gaia, she feels that's exclusionary. Would you defend a church doing that, or do you think the lines shouldn't be drawn where they're often drawn in churches?
I do have trouble with where the lines are drawn in a lot of areas, but it's more so from a place of they're not being consistent. So here, look, we have so many denominations for so many reasons, and there are different expressions of the love of God, and they call themselves the church. So it is actually possible, obviously, for Gaia to find the type of church that she's saying that's going to be championing and being advocate for LGBTQ plus community, and that's going to, whenever it comes to topics of race, that they're going to speak out in a way that's going to make you feel comfortable. And then you're going to find people that are the church that are not part of that. And that, like you said, that they're going to be Trump. The way that Trumpisms and all this stuff spewing from the pulpit. Okay. And they're going to be politically driven. And what's interesting, Justin, is the ability Christians have to say, that they have to participate in something like the hatred that Gaia had just said whenever it comes to supporting one political candidate. But then whenever they talk about loving a certain type of community, LGBTQI plus community, they get ostracized. And I think that there's a lack of consistency. So I do have an issue, not in the lines that churches draw, because I don't think there's a way around it. I actually think that you will find church communities that are going to be on all different sides, and there's not a way around that. The thing I have an issue with is the lack of consistency, that if you have someone who says, hey, that they're gay and they want to follow Jesus and they want to get baptized, that the church is going, nope, you got to change your behavior first. But then you have someone that's $200,000 in credit card debt and they want to get baptized, and they go, great, please make sure that you tithe on your paycheck. And it's like, well, wait a second. There is something about consumerism and debt that Jesus speaks to. And so those are the things that I have an issue with. The other things, and I know it sounds kind of flippant to say there's churches for everybody, I think that's a whole nother discussion of what type of church is a true church and what would I say is the historical expression of the church and all those sorts of things. But I'm saying on this one, on your question, do I have an issue where they draw the lines? I do, because it feels inconsistent. But in as much as that's true, that's a personal challenge to me as well, because I do attend a local church. I really like our local church. I think that the people on staff at our church are ecumenical. They don't think the same way. They're not ordained by one different denomination. And they think differently. They're reading different things. They have different discussions on this issue. They're going to have different opinions on the gay rights issue. But what we find is this centrality of a Jesus-looking God and a Jesus-looking people. And that's why I say I feel very comfortable there. But in the same way I say I feel comfortable there, there's other people that will not. And in Missouri, you have 1,000 churches that you can choose from. And so that would be my answer. I just think the lack of consistency. And to Gaia's point, that's probably where she would want us to ask more questions, to be more consistent. And I would say, in general, Christian or non-Christian, that's just the refining process of who we are.
We're fast running out of time. We're nearly at the end of the second segment already, so we'll have another 10 minutes or so to start to wrap this conversation up. But we've been talking with Gaia McDermott and Preston Ulmer today. The Doubters Club is the new book by Preston, and Gaia is the host of the Face the Sun podcast. We'll be back in just a moment.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable. We'll be continuing the conversation between Guy and Preston in just a moment's time. Now, I've spoken before on the show about the fact that I got pressed into being on TikTok by my son Noah about a year or so ago, and it was surprisingly popular, actually, and I tried to update it here and then. I don't put out nearly as much stuff as I probably should, But there's an article I wrote for YCW, Youth and Children's Work for Premier, on why I got converted to TikTok and why I think it's a great way of reaching young people. If you want to check that out, we put it out on the latest newsletter from Unbelievable. And you can also find it on our social media as well, Twitter and Facebook and so on. So do go and check that out if you get a chance. This week on The Profile tonight, Pastor Mick joins Megan Cornwell to talk about his life going from a dangerous drug dealer to a lifesaver. That's on The Profile, also on the podcast of The Profile, wherever you get your podcasts from. Next week here on Unbelievable, is there medical evidence for modern day miracles? Elijah Stevens, director of the film documentary Send Proof, is going to join me on the show. He'll be talking about his findings, and he'll be discussing that with miracle researcher Craig Keener as we hear some really extraordinary stories of apparent miracle healing. But will it be enough to convince atheist skeptical guest Michael Shermer, who's our other guest on the show? Join me for that really interesting discussion next week on the show on this new film documentary, Send Proof. And don't forget, you can get in touch with the show as well. I'll give out the ways to get in touch with us about today's show towards the end of the program. For now, let's get back into the final part of this week's conversation. Well, you can find links to my guests from today's show with today's programme. The Doubters Club is at thedoubtersclub.com. And you can check out Gaia's podcast, Face the Sun, Religion, Belief and Unbelief. You can find that wherever you get your podcast from. It's been really interesting having you both on the show today because, you know, I've been saying just in the break there, Gaia, to Preston, that we could have zeroed in on any of these issues that you've brought up, the resurrection, gay rights, abortion. We're not doing that today because we have plenty of shows where people can go and listen to good debates on those in the archive. But it's just what we're really talking about is for someone who has doubts, questions and so on that may not sit easily in many Christian contexts in church, how do we accommodate that? How do we create a place where questions and doubts and so on can be heard and processed and people don't feel like they're being excluded basically by just asking them and so on? But I think you had another question for Gaia, Preston, before we start to wrap the show up. Do you want to ask your question?
Sure, yeah. In the Doubters Club, we call this part your final thoughts. So we just, and then we all vote on a topic and we talk about it next time. But Gaia, here's my question. First of all, thanks for sharing all of this, because I think, like I said at the beginning, your story makes it all unique. And it's an honor for me to be able to hear it. And one of the things that I heard you say was what I believe too. It's both a head and a heart thing. Anytime that we're trying to figure out what's the truth of any given topic, it's both that contribute. So here's my question. If you found a faith community that affirmed the heart issues, what does that do to the head part of it? What does that do to your spirituality or where you've landed at with God?
So since I am an atheist, I wouldn't go on the direction of spirituality or on the God platform. But if somebody was to answer the questions of the heart, what I am seeing in preparing for some of my podcasts before the pandemic, and I was visiting places, I wanted to go to a synagogue. And I remember looking on their website and my friends coming around me and gathering and seeing what they were doing. And they said, why isn't everybody Jewish? Because they had this great interactive community involvement. So that, along with the rainbow churches that seem to be very, one of the questions you asked very early on, Preston, was what can we do for our cities? Like if we live closer together, that's what we'd be kind of talking about. So that's what I'm kind of jazzed about, not necessarily going with their spirituality, although as far as I understand, synagogues will let you become a member even if you're not Jewish. I went to the Quaker meeting house, and it seems that they have an atheist too who takes on leadership roles. So someplace that would be like that. I'm not sure if it would change my spirituality, but certainly I think we're changed when we're interacting with each other in a more deeper way.
Well, thanks for saying that. And I do know Christians, we're just always, not always, a lot of times we're just after changing someone's mind. And we've attached, you know, salvation to that. And so we feel like the stakes are heavy and those sort of things. So I just say thanks for sharing all that. And if you're ever in the same city, we'll work.
Yeah, that's right. Hartford, Connecticut. So one of the things that you say, Preston, is you know, would people be willing to change their minds? And I think that that's a question for you as well, that would you be willing? I mean, you say that you're an atheist. I'm not sure. It sounds like you're questioning in a different level. I've been an atheist for about 20, 25 years or out. And I'm wondering if you would change your mind to be an atheist, to leave the church.
Yeah, well, on that season of life for me, it was I wasn't convinced that there was a God. I wasn't convinced of Jesus. I wasn't convinced of any of those things. So when I make that claim, you know, obviously it's very different than you being an atheist. But that would be part of my story. And yes, I would say I'm open to changing my mind. I feel like that I'm arriving at different places on different topics. And the thing that would change my mind would be if the resurrection wasn't true. And then I know that the follow-up question would be, well, would you ever be open to it not being true? And I would hope that I have total integrity in saying this, but yes, I'm open to that because I want to know what truth is. I have this one life and I want to live it well and I want to teach my daughters well. And I do want to kind of orient my life around the truth. So the answer is yes, I'd be open to changing my mind. And then the question of what would change your mind would be, you know, a mutual question back and forth that I think would be great interest.
So how would you know you were wrong, Preston? How would you know you were wrong?
Great question. History for me is a big deal. And, you know, you're talking about Bart and how I think he went to school with Craig Boyd. I think they went to school together. Okay, well, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I know that they've talked often about each other.
I'm hearing about it if it is, but yeah. You may well be right.
So I know they talk often about each other. Greg Boyd is a friend of mine, and you know, you have two people who talk about the resurrection with such veracity and like passion, and one doesn't believe it and one does believe it. So to answer that question, how would I know that I'm wrong? History is a really big deal. History, and I actually wouldn't hinge it on my personal experience. I wouldn't hinge it on, do I feel anything on Sundays? Do I feel anything when I pray? For me, it would be if we were sitting down and you were saying, okay, this is historically why I don't believe that. And if I find that to be more convincing than the history of why I do believe,
and
I would
have you read?
Which, by the way,
have you read Bart Ehrman? Have you read atheist books that bring out the history of Jesus and say it from giving a different understanding?
I've read not Bart, but I've read Dawkins and I've read Harris. I've read them, and for me, it's not as convincing. And that's the fascination of the discussion, is to say, for you, you'd say, of course it is. And I would say, well, and then I think we do start to get into the territory of personal story and personal narrative. But to be unconvinced, it would be history first for me.
Yeah, well, we're not going to solve the resurrection within the wrap parts of the show. But we'll probably return to the resurrection when Easter comes up, planning to do a debate on that anyway. Look, it's been really interesting. I've got to ask this question, though, as we start to close this out, Preston. As I said earlier, we feel there's a lot of overlap between what you're doing with the Doubters Club and Unbelievable. You know, I've always been interested in trying to host these kinds of conversations where you respect the other person, where you bring two perspectives together and we have a fruitful encounter. You know, there's not necessarily a winner per se. It's just about hopefully exploring the truth together. Having said all that, I am a Christian, as you know, and to some extent, I do this because I do believe there's a God, and I do believe that God can use something like the Unbelievable Show to bring people to faith. Now, that doesn't always happen, and in fact, some people say, actually, I listened and now I'm more convinced that there's not a God or Christianity is untrue. And, you know, in a sense, I'm not here to control what happens. I just believe, though, that ultimately, when you present the honest opinions and truth, and let people make up their mind. For me, an outcome for that is that if someone became a follower of Jesus, I'd be very happy about that. Now, is the Doubters Club really as neutral as you say? Is there not a little bit of covert evangelism in there, I suppose, is the question I want to ask rather cheekily as we start to close this out?
Covert evangelism is a great term. You know, we actually have atheists and Christians who go through the training. You know, we just had an atheist, her name's Claire. She launched a Doubters Club on her college campus. And so I will say this. As a Christian, I do write about this to some degree in the book. Perhaps I should have wrote more. But I have an ultimate goal. I mean, innate to Christianity is this goal that we would populate heaven more, that increase the family of God, however you want to word that, that more and more people would know and love Jesus. So my ultimate goal, I would love to see that happen. I'm really fierce about getting rid of an ulterior goal, an ulterior motive of saying, hey, you're here so that you think like this. And I think you're doing the same thing on Unbelievable, Justin, is that you're not saying we're doing this so that the world thinks like me. It's your ultimate motive because you're a Christian is your ultimate motive. It's just part of what it means to be Christian. And in the same way, Gaia, if you thought, and I don't know if you do, but if you thought religion is bad and you take that sort of brand of humanism and you're, I mean, it would just be innate to that you might make it part of your ultimate goal is I want people to be free from that. You know, it just happens that where you land, there's this ultimate motive, but I don't want an ulterior motive. So I don't actually, it's not the aim that we ever convert someone in a Doubters Club. And I'm not trying to say this is my co-moderator and then eventually they're going to become a Christian. That to me just feels like car salesman-y. I'm just not interested in that. And I will say this, there is a very selfish part of this that I have grown and I've been challenged. And even to Gaia's last question of what would change my mind, all the stuff that I just said, what I've learned about the way I'm wired, Gaia, is all of that would have to be with someone that I greatly trust. So when I add that in there, you know, when I really trust someone and then they land at a different place, okay, well, then that does something to me. And so I like the idea of having these friendships and building trust and pursuing truth together. No ulterior motive. Ultimate motive, yes, I don't know how to get rid of that. I don't want to get rid of that. It's part of who I am. But I don't want to have a you're here so that mentality.
Yeah, I appreciate.
Well, if you're looking for community, Guy, it sounds like if there was a Doubters Club near you, you'd be the first in line.
Or you can start one in Connecticut. Shameless plug.
There's none in Connecticut, huh? There's none in Connecticut.
No.
We're pretty.
No, I can double check.
So I do say yeah. I do notice that Christians really do try to do the whole populate heaven or win people to Jesus or condemn people, and the whole like you don't get to do that. You don't get to condemn me, and you don't get to save me or win my soul. That's God. If you really do believe that there's a powerful God, I do sometimes question if Christians even think there's a powerful God, because if there should be enough power to do this, right? So if there's power to do that, and as far as converting, yeah, I don't try to convert anybody to atheism necessarily. I just do me, and that's what I think you do, Justin, too. And I'll never forget one of our earlier chats. You know, and as you saying, people leave, you know. Things will work out, you know. So, yeah, I'm not trying to convert as well. But if you want to come over to my side, you're more than welcome to. I would rejoice. I would rejoice.
Wow. Well, there will be funny. Rejoicing in the atheist version of heaven if Justin Brierley comes across. I mean, in all seriousness, though, Guy, I have appreciated this conversation because this is real life, you know. These are the real questions that real people who are involved in real conversations have. And I appreciate both of you and the honesty you've brought to this conversation. So thank you very much. Really, really interesting conversation today. Do go and check out the resources that we've already talked about. The Doubters Club is the new book by Preston. Gaia has a podcast called Face the Sun. There are links to both of those from today's show. For the moment, Gaia and Preston, thanks for being with me on Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Wonder what you make of the idea of the Doubters Club. Do send in your thoughts about today's show. You can email unbelievable at premier.org.uk. You can also share your thoughts on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Premier Unbelievable. That's our home for all things Premier Unbelievable on Facebook now. You can tweet me at UnbelievableJB. I'm over on Instagram and TikTok as well as Justin.Briley. First of all, let's go to some of your feedback to recent editions of the show. And of course, huge amount of response. This would probably be a contender for the largest mailbag of the year when it comes to last week's show, Peter Linus and Jane Ozan debating proposed legislation on a gay conversion therapy ban. And a lot of you got in touch about the way the debate happened, the amount of interruptions that happened in that debate. So over on Twitter, Aristotle's Jedi says, "I mean this to be an honest comment rather than a mere swipe, but Jane either had a bad day at the office or engaging in podcasts like this is not her thing. She would interrupt the other guest and the moderator multiple times. It was rare for her not to. Ruined the show." Chris Bastian said, "As an atheist, I'm happy that my moral philosophy isn't dependent on Christians debating what God really wants. That said, it's depressing that some pastors would reinforce the belief of some congregants that they're damaged and need conversion to the right orientation." James West said that there is no way to give consent to a prayer or teaching or counselling is not believable. And Ken Temple said, "People are responsible for their own choices. Jane Ozan and the whole LGBT movement is blaming others for their own choices and feelings rather than taking responsibility for your own choices and thoughts and feelings." And another Twitter said, "Interesting that we don't consider it abuse when one proposes surgical intervention on children for trying to harmonize sex and gender. Conversation should never be stifled." Well, those were some of the responses on Twitter, and a number of the responses via email similarly picked up on the way the debate happened. Ray, for instance, Ray Pooley in Sutton says, "I settled down to listen to the conversion therapy debate, but it was ruined because of the constant interruptions by Jane Ozan. Can I suggest using the mute button? I've always suspected that those who try to drown out opposing arguments do so because they know their own position is weak." Jeffrey said, "I confess I was working while listening and didn't really hear much, so I'm not sure who was defending what side, but what I did hear was Jane constantly interrupting Peter and not letting him make his points, and kudos to Peter for handling it as professionally as he did. This is exactly what's wrong in public discourse today, where one side is trumpeted while silencing the opposition, no matter the argument. You did the best you could to rein it in, but unfortunately, this debate wasn't helpful for all those reasons, and that's disappointing since it is such a hot button issue." Norm in Portland, Oregon says, "Maybe it's because I'm an American that hasn't followed this particular UK legislation, but I felt like the episode started mid-debate. Clearly, these guests have sparred before. I wish they would have addressed whether they recognise a difference between pastoral counselling and therapeutic counselling. If a counsellor bookends a conversion therapy session with prayer and scripture, then is that counselling religiously exempt from all regulations? And if a pastor uses psychological theories to assess and counsel a parishioner, then is that then counselling considered therapy subject to regulation? As a survivor of conversion therapy, I know firsthand that mere talk therapy from seemingly well-intentioned Christian pastors can be devastating. As a 19-year-old Christian that wanted to commit my entire life to Jesus, I voluntarily consented to so-called ex-gay ministry that my pastor referred me to. While there was much prayer, scripture, and preaching in the ex-gay program, it was the non-religious teaching and counseling that I found to be the most devastating. The Bible doesn't say anything about reparative therapy, that the supposed roots of homosexuality or even sexual orientation. It was conversion therapy administered under the guise of pastoral counseling that told me that my attractions were signs that I was sexually broken, lacked masculinity, a probable sex addict, and that I came from a broken home. What's worse is that I believed these messages about myself because I trusted these Christian ministry leaders. No counselor should convince their clients of these harmful messages. When a person acts as a counselor, whether pastoral or therapeutic, they assert that they have expertise, training, and/or techniques to help in a certain area, just in the same way when a person acts as a doctor or even an electrician. A person providing counseling, medical, or electrical services should not be exempt from responsibility or accountability by claiming religious exemption. There is no informed consent to malpractice. Thanks for hosting the episode," says Norm. Barry says, I have to disagree with Jane Ozan stating that Jesus never said anything about sex. In Matthew 19:4-6, speaking to the institution of marriage, Jesus is clear when he says, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate.'" Jesus would have known of homosexuality, although he doesn't specifically mention it in his other teachings. He makes clear that it is not what God's intention was when he created the world. Also in the Ten Commandments, it clearly states, "Honor thy father and thy mother." And Jesus said he did not come to abolish them. He came to fulfill the law, and it would not disappear until heaven and earth disappear. There are numerous scriptural passages about sex, not least the woman who was going to be stoned for committing adultery, and he told her to sin no more. Luke says, "Thank you for this program and discussion had on these new laws, particularly new to us here in Canada. I've been stewing on this for a few days now after listening to the debate. I can honestly say I tried hard to hear Jane's side and understand the why behind her passion. I can also say I'm very sorry for her hurts and struggles that she and many others have gone or are going through. I was just shocked at the coercive, shameful, and disrespectful tones, though, that she continually pushed throughout the debate. I'm very humbled at the level of patience and grace reciprocated back by Peter Linus. I'm not sure I could have stayed as level-headed as he in that situation. The whole debate is sad. It's sad that if you're a Christian, you're deemed oppressive without the chance, and it's sad that a person going through those struggles has to assume that Christians will not respond in a loving way, heaping on to their struggle. It's very hard to argue against someone with twisted views of the gospel and manipulative words. She was passionate, and she may have good reason to be. However, using subjective truths and harsh tones, I found it very hard to agree with her side, especially contrasted by Peter's loving, understanding attempts to explain his side. Frustrating listen. I'd like to say I'm praying for Jane, but I live in Canada, so I better not claim that. Tongue in cheek. Thank you, Luke. Sam says, "As always, thanks for bringing us debates on tough topics. The topic of whether or not gay conversion therapy is good or bad is only a spotlight on a much broader question. Should Christians be in the business of conversion? My Jesus-centric perspective is that Christians should be in the transformation business. We should be helping Jesus transform folks into a more true, Christ-like version of themselves. I believe Christ transcends Christians, so this concept applies to all faiths. There are always wonderful examples of folks that in this transformation process find that another faith system works better for them to be their true self, but I think that's the exception, not the rule. All this applies to the LGBTQ community too. It will help them transform into their true self. Someone will leave the label of LGBT behind, while others will become more Christ-like within the community." That's Sam's view in Cincinnati, Ohio. Here's another one from Peter Johnson, who says, "I write as someone who's been listening to and enjoying Unbelievable for many years, usually via podcast. There are a few head-scratching ones that are above my pay grade, but that's fine. But I was dismayed when listening to the program with Peter Linus and Jane Ozan. I was dismayed with Peter Linus because he was treating it as if it was a debate that had no real personal cost, simply an intellectual point-scoring exercise, such as whether it's right for women to wear hats in church. Jane Ozan was clearly getting frustrated because Peter wasn't acknowledging and recognizing the personal and very real suffering of many gay people. And what seems very clear was that he has never sat down with someone who's been badly affected and listened to their story. However, his line later on that, 'As a barrister, I can tell you, that's certainly my view, and I've looked into the law in detail on this,' was a disgraceful put down and dismissal of any other views. It's disgraceful because we're talking about pastoral issues and our faith is one of love, grace and mercy, not keeping the law, although I fully realise we are looking to decide whether protection of the vulnerable needs protection by the law. Peter just doesn't seem to believe that young LGBTQ plus youth have been taking their own lives or have been thinking seriously about it, and it is this that demonstrates his lack of contact with LGBTQ plus people. However, speaking personally, since most church leaders still seem to believe that being gay is wrong, we don't need to hear so much from Peter because we've heard it all before. We needed to hear Jane's arguments and why she feels as strongly as she does. I was brought up in an EA-affiliated Baptist church, so in the past I have personally supported much of what the EA stands for. Sadly, we have parted company over this issue of the treatment of LGBTQ plus people. Yes, Peter can name a couple of high-profile gays who'd take a position of celibacy, but what about the thousands of unknown gay Christians who struggle by with no real theological input because the church has rejected them. These folk who have prayed to be different, but then God too has turned his back on them, or at least that is what they feel. Many are badly scarred, but some hold on to a conviction that God is there somewhere, but because they get no real regular teaching, their theology can be patchy at best. The church has blood on its hands. I left my Baptist church because they were looking for scriptures to prevent a trans person from coming into membership, and they settled on the verse from Deuteronomy 22:5. This is in spite of John's comment about Jesus saying, "Whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life." That "whoever" is unconditional. It isn't "have eternal life providing they." I am now part of a church where almost everyone is LGBTQ+, and many of them have stories of how they've had to leave previous churches. Some have come from African countries where churches have thrown them out, or relatives have badly beaten them for being LGBTQ+. You may think these are irrelevant, but don't forget, it was our churches that took the teaching to Africa in the first place. We are responsible. I don't want to see pastors and ministers prosecuted, but if they're careful, there is no danger. This has only come about because the church has failed to engage with the issue for so long, and now it's been caught out. We might all have to be a lot more careful with what we promise God can do, but that might not be a wholly bad thing. That's from Peter Johnson. I could only read some segments of your much longer email, Peter, but thank you for it. Let's just do a couple more. And again, coming back in on the opposite side of this, Leah says, I'm a student at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. One of my professors recommended I listen to your show about a year ago, and I've been an avid listener ever since. Your most recent episode on Should Gay Conversion Therapy Be Banned struck me enough to send some feedback for the first time. Jane's primary concern with assisting a gay person in changing his or her lifestyle seemed to be that it was not loving to declare a person's lifestyle bad or to try to transform who they are. I'm not someone who experiences same-sex attraction, and I know that there are challenges that I can't understand because of my lack of experience. However, I became a Christian because I recognized that I was a sinner in need of deep transformation. I have areas of sin in my life that I would love to hang on to, but God in his goodness is working on me, and dare I say converting me little by little into his image and out of my sin. Regardless of whether or not any type of gay conversion therapy is wrong, as a Christian it makes no sense to say that it is wrong to change who a person is. The whole point of Christianity is to have our lives changed to our very core. If a person does not believe that every human is in need of transformation, we could reasonably wonder if they even understand Christianity. For a Christian to make this argument, she would have to show why this particular type of transformation is not God-honoring. I don't want to assume any of Jane's beliefs outside of what was said on the show, but I would imagine that as a professing Christian, she believes in the power of prayer. One of the unique things about Christianity is that it emphasizes the relationship between us and God. I would imagine Jane values this relationship because she so greatly values the love of God, as she should. When we are truly chasing the truth of Christ, I believe that we ought to go to him with all of our desires, even the ugly ones. When I look back on times when I was a less mature Christian, I know that I prayed for things that were not right. God dealt with my prayers accordingly. I probably still pray for things that reveal my sin, and hopefully God will continue to mature me into a more understanding Christian. The point is that if we really believe in the power of prayer, we shouldn't be discouraging anyone from taking everything to God. I believe that when someone comes to me with a problem, my first response should be to tell them to pray about their struggle and let God deal with it accordingly. A red flag goes up for me when I hear someone trying to restrict what Christians can and cannot pray about. How will we ever be completely transformed if we can talk to God corporately about anything, but this one thing is off limits? I don't believe that is how prayer works. Thank you very much, Leah. Josh says, first, thanks, Justin and the Unbelievable team for making these podcasts happen. I just recently listened to that episode. Appreciate how complex a topic this is and valued what they both had to offer. The question I kept wanting to ask while listening was surrounding the claim that spoken conversion therapy causes harm. Forgive an insensitivity to a very serious topic, but how does the law prove that a counsellor's advice causes someone to harm themselves or take their own life? I understand how someone yelling jump to a person on a ledge can be held criminally at fault, but in this case, we have what can be assumed a person who, in good faith, is trying to help someone who feels troubled enough to seek help, and from what I understand, a specifically requested type of help, as in, please help me resist acting on these urges. If someone left a therapy session and in despair at failed progress got drunk and drove their car into a crowd, would the counsellor be held responsible? What if the counselling recipient also left their job on the same day? Does that distribute the blame? How does this not also apply to a heterosexual who's struggling with guilt surrounding promiscuity, pornography or adultery, or any other addiction or unwanted urge for that matter? Except where direct, intentional, objective harm can be proven, it seems very difficult to justify by holding a counsellor criminally responsible for the potential outcomes of a recipient of spoken counselling. And if you're going to do it, it seems strange to confine the law to homosexual recipients. Again, I don't mean to be callous, and I'm sure I'm naive to matters that many professional counsellors know very well. And by no means should Christian counsellors ignore these issues and should do what they can to respond and provide better care, but under duress of conscience, not the law. As an American and Texan to boot, I'm not trying to horn into British politics, and now I may be misunderstanding the proposed legislation and other important contexts. Still, I'm fascinated by the discussion, and I'm sure this issue is relevant in its own way here. I'm not expecting an answer, but perhaps hoping it be food for thought for future discussions. Hats off, though, to both Jane and Peter. I'm glad they were both in the ring, and I yearn for the best outcome. Thanks very much, Josh. All right, we'll just do one more. So many of these came in the last week. Robert Jackson says, thank you for the unruffled chairing of a difficult debate with two individuals whose disagreement was never likely to lead to some kind of positive synthesis. My observation is that whilst different teachings were mentioned, the only one that was mentioned as key to the problem was the Orthodox Christian one. To my mind, the problem is as much, if not more, to do with Christian teaching being out of kilter with what our youngsters are being taught at school. This reflects a society wherein sex is one of the absolute expressions of one's identity, and the freedom to explore one's sexual desires is viewed as an unwritten but nevertheless fundamental right. Whereas popular fiction deals with sexual awakenings, it tends to ignore the impact on community and so society. Perhaps it is that in a society where everyone is supposedly free to do what is right in their own eyes, we need a plethora of laws to marshal behaviour. Furthermore, it seems that if you disagree with those in power, they'll seek to legislate, as they intend to do in this case. So perhaps the issue for Christians who find themselves desiring an intimate relationship with someone of the same sex is how to navigate the tensions that arise from the clash of values, where society that tells them it's absolutely okay, but scripture says otherwise. For Christians, such has always been the case, and while some in the UK might find a deep sense of angst, others elsewhere are being beaten to death. Thank you, Robert. Well, as I say, many more that came in on this subject. We've also got emails to the show of the week before, which was that extraordinary claims and extraordinary evidence debate between Jonathan McClatchy and Jonathan Pierce. But we'll leave it there for now, as that's plenty of feedback for one show. Thanks for being in touch. You're welcome to continue sending your emails and your thoughts in on that gay conversion therapy debate between Peter Linus and Jane Ozan. For now, thanks for being with me on this week's edition of Unbelievable. Don't forget, you can find out more from the show at our webpage, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, and links to the newsletter and ways to support the show with today's podcast too, if that's the way you're listening. And looking forward to bringing you a new website very soon, bringing together all of the resources from Premier Unbelievable. And did I mention, get that date, Saturday the 14th of May, in your diary, whether joining us in person or online from around the world for this year's Unbelievable conference. We'll be releasing the ticketing in just a couple of weeks' time. For now, let me tell you what's coming up next time. Is there medical evidence for modern-day miracles? Elijah Stevens, director of the film documentary Send Proof, will be joining me on next week's show. His findings will be discussed by miracle researcher Craig Keener, as we hear some extraordinary stories of healing. But is it enough to convince our atheist skeptic guest, Michael Shermer? Join me on Unbelievable next week to find out. See you then.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.